Today on Athens News Matters, we're less than 1 month away from one of the most monumental elections in U.S. and Georgia history. And while much of the focus is on the race for the White House and Georgia's two U.S. Senate races, there are also two key state house races in our area. This is Athens News Matters. I'm Chris Shoup.
And I'm Alexia Ridley. On today's program, we talk to the candidates for Georgia House of Representatives in Districts 117 and 119. We'll be asking them listener-submitted questions on the issues that matter to you.
In the next hour, we'll talk about health care, gun violence, the coronavirus pandemic, and more in a series of one-on-one conversations with Houston Gaines, Mocha Johnson, Jonathan Wallace, and Marcus Wiedauer.
Hours ago, halfway around the world, the day has already begun.
Tens of thousands of people in Venezuela.
Britain is leaving the European Union.
Everyone was just running. People were crying. They were in tears. And we didn't know what was happening. Police kept telling us to move back, move back.
The thousands of protesters marched along a route.
When you need to know where the world went while you weren't looking, Morning Edition. Listen every morning.
This is Athens News Matters from WUGA News. I'm Alexia Ridley.
And I'm Chris Shoup. On today's episode of Athens News Matters, we present the first of two special reports featuring one-on-one conversations with local candidates for office. Today we're talking with the candidates for Georgia House of Representatives in District 117 and District 119, two key state legislative races, both of which are very close.
For today's show, we spoke to each candidate individually and asked them each the same set of questions, which were submitted by listeners.
Our candidate conversations begin with the 117th District, where incumbent Republican Houston Gaines was elected in 2018. I spoke with him earlier this week. Representative Gaines, welcome to Athens News Matters.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it. Honored to be here.
Well, let's just kick things off by you telling our listeners a little bit about yourself and why you're running for office.
Sure. Well, you know, for me, I'm running for re-election because I love our community and I want to continue building on the progress that we've made over the last 2 years. I know that we have more to do because I know that we've accomplished a lot over the first two legislative sessions. I'll tell you, you know, we passed meaningful healthcare reform that's working to lower costs and increase access. I passed historic criminal justice reform, passed legislation to curb the opioid epidemic. We've also passed legislation to fight human trafficking. So we've done a lot in the first 2 years. But again, I believe there's more to do. So I'm running for re-election. You know, for me, over the last several months, we've basically seen our world turn upside down. And during the COVID-19 pandemic. And so that's presented even more challenges for our community and going to on the health side and economic side. We are in a challenging time. And so that has become our number one priority is to get us through this because I know it's a difficult time. But we, you know, I truly believe by working together, we'll be able to build through this crisis and get through it stronger than ever. And so that's what I'm working on. That's why I'm running for re-election. I truly believe we've done some really good things, but there is more to do.
Well, you mentioned a challenging time. Governor Kemp has been very resistant to instituting a statewide mask mandate, and in his executive orders relating to the coronavirus pandemic has prohibited local governments from enacting stronger measures. Should local governments have more local control to address the pandemic?
Well, Chris, as you know, in the current executive order, the governor does allow local governments to institute a mask mandate in counties where there are active cases. There's a certain threshold of active cases. And, you know, for me, during this pandemic, what I've done is work with all of our local governments in the district. We've got several and have worked with them throughout this pandemic to help us get our community through this time. In fact, we've helped set up regular conference calls with our local hospitals and local governments to help facilitate working together because that's what this is going to take. And that's why I think we've done some good work here is we've had folks working together. You know, it's not a time for politics. It's a time for collaborating, working together. And so for me, I believe how we're going to get through this is by folks wearing their masks, social distancing, washing their hands. We've got to be smart as individuals. And for me, I trust the doctors and I trust the scientists. I better because my father's a physician. So, you know, and much of my family's in medicine. So I know we have a significant challenge on our hands, but I'm confident that by working together, we're going to get through it. But, you know, we also have a serious economic challenge. And, you know, for me, we've got to do all we can to support our small businesses because they have been just decimated during this time. So I know a lot of folks are hurting on the health side and economic side. So we're working hard on the health side. We're also working to get the necessary resources to help our workers and our job creators to get through this.
Well, in recent years, a number of rural hospitals have closed, and the Georgia Budget and Policy Institute estimates that over half of Georgia hospitals may be financially vulnerable. What can the state do to keep rural hospitals open?
Well, this is an issue that we've got to attack head on. And healthcare, I'm on the health and insurance committee. So healthcare is something I've spent a lot of time on, and I'm passionate about our healthcare system in Georgia. You know, in terms of rural hospitals, we've basically got two major issues. One, many of these were created decades ago and still working to adapt to the business model of healthcare in the 21st century in 2020, frankly. And so that's one of the challenges. But the other challenge is, you know, for any successful model of healthcare for hospitals to survive, you basically have to have 40,000 people in that community. And there's no proposal out there to solve that issue. And so what we've done in the General Assembly is really look at this. There's not a one size fits all model. So we helped create the Rural Health Innovation Center at Mercer that we funded in this year's budget that's going to allow them to go in and look at each of these rural hospitals and address the business models at each, the issues being faced at each hospital. We also put in the current budget $15 million to help hospitals for two purposes. One, to give time for the Innovation Center to look at the business practices, but two, as you well know, hospitals have been crushed during COVID-19. So help us to get through COVID as well. There's a bunch of other things over the last couple of years, whether it's micro hospitals that through the Rural Development Council, which allows a micro hospital with an emergency room and 7 inpatient beds, whether it's the tax credit program that the General Assembly created. You know, there's a lot of pieces that we've got to work on to address this thing. And you know, what I'd ask you folks to do is look at my record of bringing folks together, working together, and that's how we're going to solve it over time.
One thing that lawmakers will have to deal with in the next year is redistricting following the 2020 census. Do you believe that the Georgia General Assembly can draw fair districts, or should redistricting be turned over to an independent body?
Well, you know, listen, on redistricting, you know, we saw in 2001 when we had certain folks in control, those maps were drawn ridiculous and they were challenged in court and had to be fixed. But listen, you know, for me, if there's a proposal out there to address this issue, I'm certainly open to it. I believe we've got to keep communities of interest together. I don't like the idea of politicians drawing their own lines. I'd rather there be some sort of maybe even a computer. You know, you got to get humans out of the process, because even, you know, certain proposals that I've seen out there, you still have human nature involved, and that's a challenge. So we'll continue to look at proposals, certainly open to them, but we've got to keep communities of interest together, get maps that are fair, and work to ensure fair representation for everybody in our state and in our community.
Well, Representative Gaines, more states are moving to legalize recreational marijuana. Should Georgia follow suit and allow regulated and taxed marijuana?
I do not support legalizing marijuana for recreational purposes. But I'll tell you, I'll never forget, I knocked on a family's door in Barrow County in my last election, 2018. And I'll never forget the story of this lady telling me about her daughter, who's having dozens of seizures every single day. And she told me how important medical cannabidiol oil was to helping her get through the incredibly difficult challenges that her daughter was having. So last year, I was really proud to help pass legislation to allow in-state cultivation for this life-saving medical treatment, because I know for families like them in Barrow County and across our community, across our state, that for medical purposes, we passed the HOPE Act, and we've got more to do. But I know that is a huge step that's going to help so many families in our state.
Well, another hot button topic is climate change. What should the state legislature do to address the effects of climate change?
Chris, you know, frankly, this is an issue that's one that's larger than our state. It's one that's larger, frankly, than the United States of America. You know, but at the end of the day, we all want cleaner water and cleaner air and cleaner energy. And so, you know, I supported legislation in the General Assembly, for example, that penalized out-of-state coal ash dumping in our state. We also included in the budget, I believe it was $16 million for the Georgia Outdoor Stewardship Program that's going to help provide funding for parks and trails and conservation efforts statewide. So we, you know, we've worked on legislation to ensure cleaner water and air for our community and for our state. And additionally, you know, we've seen natural disasters really impact us. You know, Hurricane Michael decimated so many in South Georgia. And so the General Assembly passed legislation to help those farmers out that were really hurt, economic relief. And so those are the sort of things, you know, as we have natural disasters, we've got to help our community get through those really, really tough times. And, you know, that funding for the farmers in South Georgia was, in my opinion, some of the most important work the General Assembly has done over the last several years, because I know that those farmers were really hurt by what happened with the hurricane.
What do you think is the best way to reduce gun violence in Georgia?
Well, one of the things we've got to do is address mental health. And mental health, I believe, is an issue that not only impacts that area, but so many other parts of our state. My first piece of legislation I passed really dealt with the mental health issue, and I was proud to be named a champion of recovery by the Georgia Council on Substance Abuse, because, you know, I believe in addressing mental health funding, addressing legislation like my bill, House Bill 217, that allows us to tackle mental health head on. You know, we are seeing efforts by some folks to defund police departments. And frankly, I'll tell you, I can assure you that's not the solution. You know, removing law enforcement from schools and some of these things, that's not what's going to help us address this challenge. In fact, that'll increase crime and leave some of the most vulnerable unprotected. And so for me, I want to address mental health, deal with these issues head on and get us through this.
We sure do appreciate you taking the time to talk with us today, Houston, and good luck with your campaign.
Well, thank you all so much. I really appreciate it.
Coming up after the break, my conversation with Representative Gaines's opponent, Democrat Mocha Jasmine Johnson. This is Athens News Matters from WUGA News.
Here's how to stay caught up in an election year. Step one, tune to this station for extensive election coverage from NPR News. Hear from candidates and voters on local and national issues, polling info, expert analysis, NPR reporters inside key swing states and at debates and caucuses now through November. Step two, repeat step one. Stick with us and stay informed. 2020 election, it's time to listen.
This is Athens News Matters from WUGA News. I'm Chris Shoup, and today we're bringing you the first of two special reports with candidates for local office. This week, we spoke to the four candidates running for Georgia House of Representatives in Districts 117 and 119, and we asked each of the candidates the same set of questions that were submitted by our listeners. Earlier in the show, we heard from incumbent Republican Houston Gaines, who represents the 117th District. In this segment, we'll talk to his Democratic opponent, Mocha Jasmine Johnson, who joined me earlier this week. Candidate Johnson, thanks for joining Athens News Matters today.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Well, first, let's just start out by asking you to tell our listeners a little bit about yourself and why you're running for office.
Okay, well, my name is Mocha Jasmine Johnson. I'm an educator, activist, entrepreneur, and I'm a candidate for Georgia State House District 117. My husband and I also own the Athens Anti-Discrimination Movement, and I'm running for office because I believe that it's time for change. I am fighting for working class family, for the future of our children, to ensure all Georgians have healthcare coverage, to ensure that our education system is fully funded, and to ensure that our rights are protected. And so that is why I'm running for office. I am originally from Jamaica. My family migrated to the US in the mid 80s. I relocated to Athens, Georgia, I would say in 2012, and I jumped into activism in 2016. And proudly, you know, today I've been fighting for change, for equitable change, for criminal justice reform and many different matters. And so now I want to take the fight to the Capitol.
Well, another big fight that we're all going through these days is against this pandemic. And Governor Kemp has been very resistant to instituting a statewide mask mandate, and in his executive orders relating to the coronavirus pandemic has prohibited local governments from enacting stronger measures. Should local governments have more local control to address the pandemic?
Of course. That is something that I absolutely believe. And that is one of the huge reasons why I decided to jump into, you know, decided to run for office, because at the end of the day, I noticed that our current representatives were taking away control from local government. And so the decisions that we make, that we choose to make, that is best for our community, they're reversing those things or hindering our mayor and commission to make those type of recommendations. So I believe that we should have been able to issue the mask mandate. If that is what citizens want, that is what's good for Athens Clark County. We should be able to do that. I don't agree with how fast that Georgia was reopened, how everything just, you know, it was as we were the crash dummies in the COVID-19 to see what was going to happen. So I didn't agree with that. And I applaud Athens Clark County for trying to protect us.
Well, another issue involved with fighting the coronavirus is hospitals. And in recent years, a number of rural hospitals have closed. And the Georgia Budget and Policy Institute estimates that over half of Georgia hospitals may be financially vulnerable. What can the state do to keep rural hospitals open?
They have to expand Medicaid. They have to make sure that there's funding that's available to our county. For example, I'm a woman and I don't have access to, of course I'm a woman, but I don't have access to OBGYN health clinics within this local area. So we have to make sure that there's enough funding that's available, and we have to expand our healthcare coverage to make sure that everyone, especially now dealing with COVID-19, our educators, people that are working on a part-time part-time income, our essential workers, make sure that they have access to healthcare and they're not fighting for affordable healthcare coverage or have to drive to Atlanta to get access to a good clinic, you know? So we have to make sure that there's proper funding.
Another thing that lawmakers will have to deal with in the next year is redistricting following the 2020 census. Do you believe that the Georgia General Assembly can draw fair districts, or should redistricting be turned over to an independent body?
I definitely think it should be turned over to an independent body in order for us to have fair representation and to have a fair voting system. For example, with me, Jonathan Wallace, Spencer Fry, you could walk down Lumpkin Street and walk throughout each one of our district. Mm-hmm. The way that is chopped up is you can see that it's directly arranged so that one party can hold power over the other party. So if we have an independent body, I believe that we will create a more fair system when it comes to redistricting, regardless of who takes office in 2021.
Well, another big hot button is the legalization of marijuana. More states are moving to do so. Should Georgia follow suit and allow regulated and taxed marijuana?
I definitely think that Georgia should do so, because as we can see, other states that have done so, it has benefited them financially. You know, the ACLU estimates that the United States spends over $3.6 billion enforcing marijuana laws. Mm. So it's actually causing taxpayers more to incarcerate people over marijuana laws. You understand?
Right.
So, and it's over, it's basically mainly over marijuana use. So if they look at where other places are making it legal, they're actually benefiting more from it. Mm-hmm. You know, so in within my district, residents are five times more likely than white residents to be arrested for marijuana use and to face a harsher punishment. We see that all across the board. If you look on the court system, even go down the inmate sheet, you will see how the charges are disproportionately impacting Black and Brown community. And marijuana is one of those things that are used to incarcerate Black and Brown people.
What should the state legislature do to address the effects of climate change, another thing that's in the headlines these days?
Okay, so one of the biggest things that I have recognized with the climate change issues is that the dumping and the backlash from coal ash in like Jackson County and those different areas, they have to create safer measures to where we're not the dumping grounds. The poor areas are not the dumping grounds for the pollutants and for the factories. So they have to make sure that they're implementing cleaner air, making sure that we have access to cleaner airs. And that also goes back to the redistricting, looking at how these things are impacting the poor and marginalized areas and finding ways to funnel more resources when it comes to environmental issues, when it comes to food justice, when it comes to cleaning up our environment. So we have to look how we can save those areas, those marginalized areas.
Well, another big issue is gun violence, of course, in Georgia. What do you think is the best way to reduce gun violence across the state?
We definitely have to make sure that we're doing background checks. And one of the biggest things that I've seen and noticed is people having access to guns. We have to make sure that people that have issues with domestic violence, they don't have easy access to guns. People that have mental illnesses, more at risk to committing suicide, it's not easy for them to have access to weaponry. So we have to enforce our laws to protect our citizens from being harmed due to issues of like domestic violence, dealing with police shootings. We just have to reduce the access to weapons. And we have to begin to collect data as well to where these harms are being committed. Another thing is that's really highly concerning to me is the campus carry. For students to be able to have access to guns on campus or even to promote for teachers to have access to guns, I think that we have to rethink that. We know that an incident happened at UGA where a student shot himself in the leg in the science lab. So those are the type of things. People causing harm to themselves because they have easy access to weaponry.
Candidate Johnson, thanks for joining Athens News Matters today.
Well, thank you for having me, and I look forward to speaking to you again.
And good luck with your candidacy.
All right. Thank you.
Coming up after the break, my colleague Alexia Ridley speaks to the candidates in District 119. This is Athens News Matters from WUGA News.
An All Things Considered story starts with the news.
Two women set to become the first female Army Rangers ever.
That day, we wanted to follow it with a conversation from a woman who was in the military.
So we just email everybody.
Whittle it down to one. We get her on the phone.
Welcome to the program, Sergeant Marquez.
Thank you very much, Audie.
I want to start just with your reaction.
There's more to every story on All Things Considered every afternoon.
This is Athens News Matters. I'm Chris Shoup.
And I'm Alexia Ridley. On this special edition of Athens News Matters, we're talking one-on-one with candidates for Georgia House of Representatives. In the first half of the show, we heard from Houston Gaines and Mocha Jasmine Johnson, who are running in the 117th District. In this half hour, we talk to the two candidates for District 119. We ask each candidate the same set of questions, which were submitted by our listeners, And we begin with my conversation with Democrat Jonathan Wallace, who is challenging incumbent Marcus Wiedauer for a seat he once held. So tell our listeners just a little bit about you and why you're running for office.
Hey, Alexia, thanks for having me. My name is Jonathan Wallace, and I decided to run for office first in 2017 out of frustration with the tenor of politics that I saw at the national level and the firm belief that if I stepped in and modeled the type of politics that that I would like to see, that we can see a different type of government that works for the people. So that was the thing that compelled me to step in. It's a big part of faith. I've done a lot of work in the past in entrepreneurship, and I find myself drawn to places where we can express our faith both in government and in creation and in religion. So being involved in politics is a chance to sort of put my words into action and say, I'm going to step out on faith that we can operate in government based on trust, based on transparency, and based on good governance.
And you're interesting because you're a former incumbent running for your seat again. So you're in a unique position there. Governor Kemp has been very resistant to instituting a statewide mask mandate. And in his executive orders relating to the coronavirus pandemic, he has prohibited local governments from enacting stronger measures. Should local governments have more local control to address the pandemic?
Without a doubt, they should have the ability to enact the measures that they see fit to protect the people in their communities. We know that there's been a temptation to treat this issue, the pandemic, as uniform across the country. But we saw the impact in Albany with community spread due to a couple of incidences that overwhelmed their local hospital systems where they were diverting patients to other systems. And so without a doubt, it's incredibly apparent that local leaders need to have the opportunity to make decisions based on the conditions on the ground. And it comes back to an issue of local control, something I advocated for and represented when I was serving before in this position. And I think it's important that we realize that the conditions in Augusta or Atlanta will not be the same as the conditions here in Athens. And if we want to preserve our ability to treat patients who may not have COVID, we have to be conscious of what the spread is in our community. So having accurate information so that we know how the spread is in our community is incredibly important. And then having the ability to act on that information is just as critical for us to respond to conditions if they were to start to overwhelm our healthcare systems here in the city.
Speaking of healthcare systems, in recent years, a number of rural hospitals have been closed, and the Georgia Budget and Policy Institute estimates that over half of Georgia hospitals may be financially vulnerable. What can the state do to keep rural hospitals open?
Yeah, this has been a big concern for me. Even though our hospitals seem to be in great shape here in the Athens area, we saw in the last, since 2014, we've seen 6 or 7 hospitals that are closed. And there was a recent announcement of a facility in Jackson that is announced that it will be closing soon. So we've seen the healthcare costs that have ballooned in the past 10, 20 years has done a number on our hospitals, and it's leading to dire circumstances in the rural parts of our state. So I advocated in 2017 for an expansion to Medicaid. Can we close the Medicaid gap? It's something that would bring healthcare access to around 500,000 Georgians. It's something that would bring around 30,000, 40,000 jobs to Georgia, which would be great from an economic standpoint as well. And we're already paying for this functionality anyway, the service we're paying. These tax dollars go up to the federal government and they're being shared with other states. These other states expanded Medicaid in 2014 or 2015 or 2016, and we've had time to see what the impact has been on their state numbers. And what we've seen is that the insurance costs for the people who are paying for private insurance increase less quickly. So it's less expensive over time. Additionally, more people have access to healthcare earlier in the process. So healthcare costs for them become cheaper. It becomes a net win all around, both on a personal level and a fiscal level. It's something that's way past due here in the state. Instead, we've wasted time with Medicaid waivers that have been knocked down by the federal government. The Trump administration sort of said no to some of the things we've asked. And because of those, we've wasted time. And to give a dollar amount to it, it's about $8 million a day that our state is not receiving when we have not expanded Medicaid and close that Medicaid gap. So without a doubt, as a state legislature, that'd be something I would be advocating for and pushing for us to do. It's way past time that we did it. It makes financial sense. We have the receipts from the other states that shows the impact both to the individuals in the state and to the cost of the individual and to what happens to the state budget as well. So closing that Medicaid gap would just be crucial for us to do. And we need to have done it a long time ago.
One thing that lawmakers will have to deal with in the next year is redistricting following the 2020 census. Do you believe that the Georgia General Assembly can draw fair districts, or should redistricting be turned over to an independent body so that legislators are not, in effect, drawing their own districts?
I supported in the 2017, 2018, 2019 tenure in the role, supported an independent body taking that responsibility over. I do think that we can do a better job of it. If that's something that is not feasible for it to happen, that we can redistrict with more transparency. So what things that we can do is ensure that we have the committees that are doing that work, if it still resides within the legislature around the state, they can go and have open meetings with the public, talking about what we're doing, how we're doing it. The goals of the redistricting could be specified ahead of time. The body that does this work could produce a written report summarizing the work that was done along the way. And then we can also incorporate feedback from the citizens as well. Ultimately, I would like that same work to be done by an independent body, where that way is voters picking the legislators, not legislators picking their voters. And so I would love to see that happen, see it to be in the hands of an independent body.
More states are moving to legalize recreational marijuana. Should Georgia follow suit and allow regulated and taxed marijuana?
Yes, I think so. This is something I think is another opportunity for us to address some of the budget challenges we face. I think we've seen, again, other states who have led the way and proven how this impacts their bottom line and how they receive more funds for more services in their state. If we can do this safely, and I repeat, it has to be safe, there are risks to any actions we take in the state. But I know for a fact that North Carolina has prepared themselves to take advantage of those tax revenues if the state body should choose to go that way. And I would hate for us to lose out to a sister state to either side of us that has the same nice environment for raising new revenues. So it would be something that we could see an impact on the criminal justice side as well as raising our revenues. And I think it's something that we should examine as a state legislature.
And what should the state legislature do to address the effects of climate change?
So this is something else that I've been investigating and working on during this campaign cycle. We haven't had the opportunity to speak about it much yet, but I think it's incredibly important that we stop externalizing the cost on our climate onto our citizens. How do we ensure that the cost of poor climate policy, whether it's business or government, are sort of hidden from the people who are impacted? We saw issues with the Sterigenics plants in Cobb County and in Middle Georgia, where they were over, issuing more carcinogenic emissions than they were supposed to. And it's important that those costs be identified. So I would love to see us do something like a carbon tax credit program, where we're looking at the amount of carbon taxes, our carbon that's being emitted, and ensuring that we take that cost and make sure that it's being made available and transparent to us, the state, so we can make better decisions about the impact on our state and our citizens.
And my final question, what do you think is the best way to reduce gun violence in Georgia?
So there's a lot of opportunity for us here to address gun violence in Georgia. I've advocated for common sense gun regulation. We can look at addressing red flag laws. So I think one of the biggest concerns that I have is that we know that issues of domestic violence can lead to the most deadly circumstances with guns. We know that folks who don't properly secure their firearms, that can lead to accidents and deadly encounters as well. And so I think it's incredibly important that we pass red flag laws for folks who may have an issue with previous mental health challenges, making sure that those folks stay safe while they get the treatment that they need. The mental health crisis, I think, is tied into this risk as well. We see that self-harm can often be part of the problem from gun violence. So it's a big issue that runs a gamut from individual responsibility, as well as making sure that folks who don't have the, that aren't in a circumstance where they need to have the access to that type of firearms, that we make sure that they are safe during those times when they need treatment.
So that is all the time we have for this segment. Thank you very much, Jonathan Wallace.
Thank you so much for having me.
Coming up after the break, we hear from Republican State Representative Marcus Wiedauer. This is Athens News Matters from WUGA News.
Some things you don't really have to question. If you want to believe the dog in that viral video was cooking spaghetti, you go for it. But how your decisions this November will affect your community, that is worth really thinking about. On your NPR station, you get reporting that informs your decisions and challenges what you think you know, because some things are worth that extra mental energy. 2020 election, it's time to listen.
This is Athens News Matters. I'm Alexia Ridley. On our program today, we're talking to candidates for Georgia House of Representatives and asking them a set of questions submitted by our listeners. Our final conversation today is with Republican incumbent Marcus Wiedauer, who represents the 119th District. We spoke earlier this week. First off, I'd like you to tell our listeners a little bit about you and why you're running for office.
Well, hi, I'm Marcus Wiedauer, representative of District 119, which encompasses a good portion of Oconee and about a third of Clark. You know, I was fortunate enough to win election to this seat in 2018 with the support of my wife and three kids. I got an 18-year-old that's at UGA right now in her freshman year, and I have a 13 and 11-year-old that are both in middle school. You know, initially I ran because a group of people came to me and thought that I would be a good fit to fill that role when Chuck Williams was getting appointed to the Georgia Forestry Commission. And, you know, it takes, for me, it was different when, instead of just being a guy in a community, when people in the community saw you as a leader of that community, and it takes on a different responsibility in my mind. And, I chose to accept that challenge and really just excited and honored to have been able to represent my community. And that's what I'm down there to be, is just a level-headed voice of reason. And I think I have done a good job of being approachable from all angles, and anything that anyone wanted to talk to me about, whether we saw completely eye to eye or not, I've been available for that. And I think that that's something I want to continue to bring to the job.
Governor Kemp has been very resistant to instituting a statewide mask mandate. And in his executive orders relating to the coronavirus pandemic, he has prohibited local governments from enacting stronger measures. Should local governments have more local control to address the pandemic?
I think that, you know, with all this, and it's hard to keep in mind that obviously, every single community is different, and you hear us talk about local control a lot because it's something I believe in. I think in this particular situation, when you're really trying to balance the health of the community as well as the health of the economy, it's been a really tight rope to walk, and especially when information is coming at him and in lightning speed and changing frequently in a situation that's been new to everyone. You know, I think that he's given some latitude for people to make some decisions, but also try to keep the state at large in mind. You know, and we've been very fortunate, I think we've been very fortunate as that's moved forward to kind of balance those two things.
In recent years, a number of rural hospitals have closed, and the Georgia Budget and Policy Institute estimates that over half of Georgia's hospitals may be financially vulnerable. What can the state do to help keep rural hospitals open?
Well, you know, that's one of the biggest things. I mean, healthcare in general and insurance, all those things are, you know, if I believe that's the top of our list of things to look at. We've passed over 30 bills going after medical issues. Transparency in billing, allowing those rural hospitals an opportunity to actually be more profitable and not have some of those hardships that they currently have. It's not something that I feel personally that you can just wave a wand and fix with one piece of legislation. It's something that is going to take some effort, which is why, you know, again, with 30 bills going after those industries, It's definitely a primary focus of the legislature, and we plan on continuing that effort.
One thing that lawmakers will have to deal with in the next year is redistricting. Following the 2020 census, of course, do you believe that the Georgia General Assembly can draw fair districts, or should redistricting be turned over to an independent body so that legislators are not, in effect, drawing their own districts?
I can say that from the beginning, if you've ever watched an interview with me, I like a fair fight. I like a level playing field across the map. So if there's a push and an acceptance for a third party, I'm fine with that. I want to stay, quite frankly, as far away from that subject as I can, because I think that just starts to cloud it for everybody. I think it can disenfranchise people. And whatever the lines end up being, and if I'm honored to be there still, then I'll be happy to represent the people I get to have that opportunity for.
More states are moving to legalize recreational marijuana. Should Georgia follow suit and allow regulated and taxed marijuana?
I don't believe that they should. I was very proud to be behind the medical marijuana. I think that's something that if we passed legislation a couple of years ago for people to be able to use it, but we fell short of giving them the opportunity to acquire it. And there are a lot of people that really are in need of that medical use. And I was proud to help champion that. I actually spent a lot of time, Micah Gravely was the author of that bill, and spent a lot of time with Micah and trying to rework that so that it was used for its intended purposes, which is getting medical marijuana into the hands of the people that really, really need it. And I think that is something that I will continue to support and go from there.
So you would like to make it easier for people who can have access to medical marijuana to actually be able to get it here in Georgia?
That's right. And we made we passed the bill last year to really set that whole structure up. There's still some work to be done on exactly how to maneuver that so that we can get that medical marijuana into the hands of the people that are really hurting and needing.
And what should the state legislature do to address the effects of climate change?
Well, that's tough. That is tougher. Obviously, I think that a lot of that's going to be handled at a federal level. Not to say that at a state level we can't. I'll tell you, in House Bill 1015 that I introduced last year is actually a carbon sequestration bill that I was the author of. And what our aim there is to actually be a Georgia-centric bill where it would incentivize companies to infuse carbon into their building products so that we sequester that out of the air. And move closer to a neutral carbon footprint. It's something that, quite frankly, turned some heads because maybe not a bill that you would think stereotypically somebody like me might carry. But it is definitely, I think, if we can continue to do things like that, where not only is it a good for the economy, but also, good to reduce the carbon footprint, but also good for Georgia products.
And tell me, why did you introduce it? Because people might think, oh, this wouldn't come from you. Why introduce a bill like that?
Well, like a lot of things, people reach out to you with different ideas or different thoughts or concerns. Some of those spark interesting conversations, and this is a byproduct of that, where I ended up in a conversation with some people that brought the concept to the table. And we revamped it and continued to work on it. And it was something that just made sense. It's an opportunity to, like I said, be a Georgia-centric solution to something that has become more and more prevalent of a concern.
And my final question is, what do you think is the best way to reduce gun violence in Georgia?
I think the biggest thing is, I feel like obviously it's a huge social issue, right? I think that there are a lot of the things that we see right now that are going on. Whereas it's nice to see your faces on a Zoom call, I would much rather, be in person, because I think that human connection continues to, is the type of thing that makes us all better people. And the more that technology is great, but the more it's introduced and infused in our day-to-day lives, I think it's society, you know, we're dehumanizing each other. And I think that that is one of the biggest things that leads to a lot of our violence, not just gun violence. A lot of things that are going on right now, a lot of the just unnecessary hatred towards each other for various reasons. I think a lot of that happens behind a keyboard and not because or less face-to-face interaction. And I think if we, you know, unfortunately, we've got to kind of get back to that at a community level. That's not something you can legislate. That's something that we just have to be better people in our communities. Just be better to each other. If you don't agree with somebody, doesn't mean you hate them. You might actually learn something if you listen. And I think that a lot of the violence we're seeing now, whether it's gun or not, is going to start with us being better people in our communities.
Well, that is all the time we have. Thank you so much.
Have a great rest of your week.
You've been listening to Athens News Matters from WUGA News. Our producers are Martin Matheny, Gene Davis, Megan Wan, Jessica Wurst, and Laura Yordanova. The opinions expressed on this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of WUGA or the University of Georgia.
And don't forget, you can listen back to today's stories and all of our stories on our website at WUGA.org. You can also check out the WUGA mobile app, available for Apple and Android. And of course, we'd like for you to follow us on Facebook and Twitter at WUGA-FM. For Chris Shoup, I'm Alexia Ridley, and this has been Athens News Matters from WUGA News. Don't forget to join us next week for our second series of candidate conversations, where we talk to candidates for district attorney and Clark County Sheriff. Until then, stay safe and healthy, and thanks for listening.